Greetings. You are now listening to the McAfee Croncast. Stand by for your hosts, Brian Murphy and Doug Bruzzoni. They will be discussing your favorite baseball squadron, the San Francisco Giants. Take it away, Brian and Doug.
And the intro is wrong because joining me this week is Ruben Poling. Ruben.
What's up, Brian? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for stepping up and coming off the bench here. I like your splits. You don't really have any strong splits. You're good from both sides of the plate and a lot of veteran presence.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm just here to try to get some good at bats and help out the team however I can. Oh man, I am really not good at interview boilerplate. I keep trying to put actual opinions in here.
That's why in the rundown I just put rhubarb. So it could have been anything. We could have been doing anything. So the Giants, if you didn't know, if you're just listening to us strictly for Giants news, first of all, thanks. But mainly, the Giants had a 5-1 week, and they have the best record in Major League Baseball.
They are on pace for, I believe, 102.6 wins.
And those 0.6 wins, it would have been a full win, but after in the seventh inning and on, it was Hunter Strickland and George Contos and Javier Lopez. Just they blew that. So that's why it was only 0.6, right? Haha, jokes. Anyway, so the Giants have the best record in baseball at the All-Star break for the first time since 1993.
I was really hoping you weren't going to say that.
I'm bringing it up right now.
And they're on pace for, like, rounding error. They're on pace for 103 wins. Ooh. Oh, no.
Could not have picked a worse comp. because as painful as 2002 was, and certainly the pain of that has been dulled quite substantially, I would say, but it's still there. Yeah. I feel like, at least to me personally, 1993 has not gone away. It's kind of changed in different ways. Like, the pain has evolved and twisted into other things, but it's still there very much.
Right, yeah, because, like, as I, you know, at the time, I was what, seven? Yeah, I was seven, which was, I mean, peak age to have my heart broken by baseball. But as I get older, now I look back, I'm like, why couldn't Will Clark have just been a little better? Like, that was the worst year of his career. Like,
yeah.
You're right, it gets worse in different ways.
That the Braves were gifted Fred McGriff.
Oh, God. Yeah.
If the Rockies could have beaten them one damn time.
Literally.
One time. If Dusty Baker didn't think Solomon Torres was the answer. There's a lot of things that that makes me go, why? Why did that happen?
So. Yeah. I feel I've actually hate the Braves more with every passing year. Like, it's actually the reverse. You know, I'm the Angels, whatever that happened, it was bad, but, you know, they're stuck being like the depressing mirror universe Dodgers. But the Braves, man, they just get worse.
Yeah, the Braves, but I mean, I also remember it just because so many magical Braves bandwagon fans jumped on board in my school. And so that was another factor. I'm like, I can't believe this. This is like ridiculous.
How would you like? Why would you bandwagon the Braves? That seems like something you're like, you're born into and just like this shameful family secret. You know, like
I really think they were just A's fans.
Yeah.
Who just flipped over? So there we are. So there's the 1993 thing. We're getting it right out of the way. There's a little stat in our blog talk site, and it tells me abandonment and completion. And so if you listen to under 2 minutes of the podcast, it's considered, and you click it closed, it's called abandonment. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a high abandonment since 1993 is in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I feel like we should put a disclaimer when you read this out, like, all the depressing stuff is at the beginning.
Yeah, so that's a good idea. I will strongly consider that. So let's revisit the goodness, sugary sweet goodness that was a 5-1 week. On last week's Croncast, we covered the 3-1 PV win on Labor Day, two home runs plus Posey, Angel Pagan, Jake Peavy looked like a major league starting pitcher again. It was great. And we were recording that just before the second game of that series started. And that was the only game I predicted, I predicted the Giants would win. So that was, of course, the only game this week that they lost.
Oh, yeah.
I predicted a 14-0 thrashing by the Giants. And instead, it was a 7-3 meltdown by the Giants.
And if I recall that game right, like, it was basically competitive. Like, they had an early lead. It was a tight game.
Yeah.
Up until, like, Hunter Strickland just decided to process his feelings all over the mound.
And it really was a game that they kind of gave away. And the bullpen doing that thing where you just put it so... It's kind of one thing to blow a lead. Maybe it's tied or you're behind one or maybe even two with this offense. But when it's just like a 6-run inning, it's just like, okay, forget it.
Yeah.
Like even Bochy knew it's like, okay, let's just punt this stuff. Sorry, it was a 4-run inning and a 7-run inning. But, it was just like a complete whatever. And, it's a good thing that we're all blocked by Hunter Strickland. But let's not forget.
I'm not blocked yet. I wonder what I've been doing wrong.
You don't show up on his vanity searches because you probably just comment on the situation, disaster, right, instead of saying this fault line was the cause of the earthquake.
Yeah.
So that's
probably, yeah.
We're mentioning Hunter Strickland. That really was on Corey Guerin. Probably the most trusted guy in the bullpen, even slightly more than Casilla, I would think.
Oh, definitely.
He just completely lost it.
Well, what's interesting is I think if you compare them, Casilla is still the better pitcher, like the better reliever.
Right.
It's just closers are graded on such a different scale, right? Like if you had Corey Guerin having the sort of season that Casilla had, it'd be like, oh my God, that guy's our best setup reliever. And if you had Casilla having a Guerin season, it would just be like, what a nightmare. Just kind of what's happening.
But I think what we're talking about, right, when we're saying better, we're saying stuff.
Yeah,
and I think with Guerin, the reason why he's more trusted is that in theory he's supposed to get more ground balls.
Yeah,
and I think that at least organizationally, I'm not going to try to. I can only talk to the team I've been following my entire life. That is far more trustworthy than a guy who strikes out a lot of players, which doesn't actually hold up to the statistical scrutiny. And this is actually a problem that Grant pointed out in his recap of this particular game, that the Giants relievers put a lot of stress on the defense because they don't strike guys out. And if Corey Guerin is not sinking his pitches and he just throws a cookie to Nolan Arenado, it's going to go far. That's exactly what happens.
And didn't Guerin go on the DL like immediately after the game?
Pretty much. Yes. Yeah.
So obviously it wasn't right.
I'm pretty sure that before Bochy got down into the clubhouse that's what happened. But the good news is we can transition right into the next game, because this game was the only loss of the week, and it was just a reminder that the Giants have some bullpen issues, and which we already knew. So then that led right into a 5-1 win where Johnny Cueto was Johnny Cueto. He was the guy.
Yeah, like... He is a self-describing phrase at this point.
He's right.
Magnificent, and there's really nobody like him.
He Cueto'd the hell out of this game.
I was skeptical of the Cueto signing. You were too, right?
No.
No? That was the one. You were the one. That was the one thing you liked about the Giants?
I was for both deals.
Wow. Good job. I was definitely – so I was nervous about Cueto. I was nervous about his injury history and just kind of like weird up and down performance. But even when I was like talking myself into it afterwards, which I did in like 5 minutes, I did not expect him to be anywhere. Like, this is incredible.
I guess one thing with him – well, I mean, I'll just recap real quick his line for that game that we're talking about that he Cueto'd. It was a complete game. It was his fourth of the season. He had 8 strikeouts, 1 walk. And 5 hits. And he really just, like, he looked really comfortable in his own skin, Just he could do whatever he wanted. And he's looked like that in most of his starts.
I'd even go so far as to say, like, just about all of his starts. Like, even thinking back to early on, he had those two stinkers where he got just crushed in the first inning, right?
Yeah, even the Dodgers, I think of the Dodgers one more, because that was definitely a game where he settled in, like, yeah, he just flipped a switch, more or less, and yeah, it was really
like,
rough, yeah.
You could do that, like, how many times have the Giants had, you know, someone go out there, get, you know, PB'd out of there in an inning in two-thirds, and all of a sudden the bullpen is just hosed for a week, and
right. Quit.
Even when he's bad, he's still this pillar of stability.
I really think he's like the Leivon Hernandez of the team. Like, he's got that kind of rubbery arm quality to him. And maybe he'll be a little shaky, but then he just can keep – he doesn't really – his stuff doesn't really change. Like, it's just a matter of looking
– a 40-year-old Johnny Cueto doing Bartolo Colon things.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, in that sort of vein of just like this big guy who just throws – he just throws kind of slop pitches. You know, we're – Cueto is not a slot pitcher, but you know what I mean. A lot of breaking stuff, off-speed pitches, and he's kind of got this goofy energy to him that throws everyone off kilter.
I mean, he's, you know, it's nice that he works, you know, in the mid-90s, but he could probably later on live at 91, 92. He wouldn't be this guy, but he still has such good command.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got a really good slider. I mean, it's very consistent. He has a lot of movement on – I mean, he has movement on all of his pitches. This isn't like, oh, I'm Jeff Samardzija, here's a fastball, and it's just a straight line. You know, it's – or Hunter Strickland again. But he just does a lot – he's really interesting, right? Just when you watch him, he's interesting. And he just seems very easy. And this is just another game. It's his fourth – it's another game like many, many others already in this half season. Again, it's fourth complete game of the season, and he's that ties his career high, by the way, of four complete games in the season. Last time he had that was in 2014 when he was with the Reds. And the reason why I liked the signing, and I believe I stated clearly why I liked the signing, was when you were on the show. That was the Mike Farron episode. That's the one.
I was on the show with Mike Farron.
Mike Farron. So that was the one where he went through his half season with Kansas City. And I was like, okay, he was really good at the beginning and then he was really good at the end. And he was bad for a stretch with them. But I mean, there's like so many reasons that can explain why he wasn't great. But other than that, for his career, he's been some version of this. But my bigger point is, we thought about AT&T Park helping Jeff Samardzija. I think it's got to be helping Cueto too.
Yeah. I think that, what's a good way to put this? The park gives pitchers a margin for error, specifically when it comes to balls in play, to, you know, getting away with mistakes. And when you're, you know, not that Cueto is, again, necessarily a finesse pitcher, but a pitcher with more finesse than Samardzija, like, or similar guys. Like, he can get strikeouts, but he likes to pound the zone. He likes to get contact. And AT&T is going to be your friend if you can consistently induce contact that stays in the ballpark, Jeff.
Right. Well, and I put this in my recap for the last Samardzija start, was that Samardzija definitely goes through innings, like clumps of innings in a game, where he's operating on one plane. And it's usually the belt high. Like, he can't get any of his pitches off of a certain plane. And one thing about Cueto is, you know, maybe it's batter to batter even. He works all the different levels. He changes eye levels. Those pitches are everywhere. But he's also really good at keeping the ball down in the zone pretty consistently as well. So I think just all that deception and movement, it helps him. And yeah, one thing we're not even talking about here is the Buster Posey factor, as the two of them seem to have a really great rapport, which is maybe a little surprising, because other than Madison Bumgarner, I cannot think in his tenure with the Giants where you could say that, really.
It is, well, I think we're a little skewed by the whole, you know, weird Tim Lincecum drama, which may or may not have actually been a thing. But was on the tip of everyone's tongue, because at the time, Tim Lincecum was obviously, you know, the once and future ace of the Giants and was just going to be a Hall of Famer. So I think that kind of skewed how we think of it. Like, I don't think Buster necessarily has like a you know, friendship bracelets kind of rapport with the rest of the staff like he does with Bumgarner. But but he's a good catcher. He gets you extra strikes.
Well, I'm saying that I think he's got a second bracelet now with Johnny Cueto.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, that's what they seem to like each other, which is what's really cool.
It's probably all like sparkly and has. Oh man, that must be the best friendship bracelet.
And I just like his energy, and I'm glad he's on the team for these next two seasons, and I won't be sad when he's gone, because it will have been, I'm going to enjoy the good times while they're here. That was another reason why I like the deal, because I know it's a two-year contract.
See, I'm already like, that's the thing, I agree with you in my head, but my heart is already like, well, maybe if they could get him for like a year deal afterwards. Like, I'm going to miss him already, like half a season in, and he's already one of my favorite Giants pitchers ever.
He's fantastic, and I don't know what else to say in terms of like, I mean, I want it to keep going. He's a pitcher, so there's always that risk that he could just disappear one day. And that's always kind of weird, right, with pitchers. But basically, let's just, maybe I'm at the point in my life where I'm like, let's just enjoy him while we got him, man.
Yeah, so, no, that's fair.
And I remember there was a tweet. This is good because we're now going to just fall into the Friday start against Arizona. But there was a tweet from today. Sorry, excuse me, because we have to pretend that this is Monday.
So. Oh, is it? Is it Monday?
Yeah, okay. It's Monday. Yeah, it's Monday, July 11th. I didn't announce it at the top. But July 10th, last night, Hank Shulman tweeted kind of like a trolling response to a troll about Jeff Samardzija's contract. And he said, you know, we're 18 starts into 160 starts. So you can't really say one way or the other about the whole deal. And so, you know, let's enjoy it's kind of, there's something to, you know, let's for the moment put a pin in the playoffs. We've got Johnny Cueto for about 66 starts. And we're about, what, a quarter of the way through that. So let's enjoy them. And there's something kind of fun about that. And rather than be like the Barry Zito or Tim Lincecum thing, like, ugh, we've got 30 more starts with this guy. You know, we got to just ride this out, which is more often the case with baseball.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare you get like a two-year deal. And I know it's an opt-out, but it's essentially a two-year deal. And one of the early aughts Saber things that I think really still holds up is there's no such thing as a bad two-year deal. You know?
You give me some time, I can think of one. But no, I think you're right. Like, there's...
The Lincecum deal was a bad two-year deal, but ultimately, did it really block them from doing anything really significant?
No. You're right. Yeah. If you can get someone, and that's all the risk you're assuming is like, if this player's bad, we'll have to deal with him next year too. But
yeah. I mean, I suppose in the case of Cueto, what could have made it really sting is if he had a draft pick compensation attached to him, then that is a problem. Now it's 2 years. It's not just money. So then I can see it anyway. But yeah, I'm glad he's on our side, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Cueto in a few minutes again. So don't fret if you want us to just talk about Cueto and you're listening
don't
to this.
Don't Johnny Cueto fans.
Exactly. So let's go into the other subset, the smaller subset of Giants fans who exist. That's Jeff Samardzija rooters who are out there. And he had a solid start on Friday night.
Six and a third?
Yeah, he went 6 1/3. And if he hadn't had such a rough first inning or two, where I think he threw 50 pitches in the first two innings, he probably could have gotten through that sixth inning okay. It was a 6-2 win. The bullpen was okay. But really, the story of this game was that the Diamondbacks are a freaking clown show.
They are tire fire that is like four tires, all of them on fire, and it is a clown car.
I will not even give them my cherished stupid insult of they're a train wreck humping a plane crash. They are just, they're just garbage. But they threw at Buster Posey. They tried to hit Buster Posey. They threw at him twice in the same at bat because they took offense to Jeff Samardzija hitting Gene Segura, which is actually a harder sentence to say than I thought. Because Gene Segura, on the first pitch of the game, hit a home run off of Jeff Samardzija, which is what Jeff Samardzija does. His career home run per nine innings is one. So every game, he gives up a home run.
He just got it out of the way early.
He got it out in the first pitch. And so then the next at bat, Gene Segura's next plate appearance, Jeff Samardzija hit him. I'm pretty sure he didn't hit him on the first pitch.
No,
I'm trying to scroll through it. So
right,
Jeff Samardzija doesn't know where the ball's going. So I'm left to think that the Diamondbacks are a bad team because they don't scout.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they're like Jeff Samardzija.
Right.
They sent their best control guy out for an eagle eye strike on the elbow or whatever. So I'm given to understand that Segura has been hit by pitches a lot. And in the last Giants D-back series, I think Osich hit someone a couple times or something, hit a couple batters. There was all this sort of ancillary, like, I think if you ask the Diamondbacks, they would not like necessarily be able to name every incident that happened, but there would be this general air of grievance, right? That, oh, they just keep doing it to us. They keep doing it to us. And I'm going to say, if you're operating in like, make the assumption that you're operating in that macho bullshit baseball framework, right? Like that you're, you know, it is an acceptable thing to beat another team's best player to just show that you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore.
Well, that's quite a memory.
Yeah. And also, like, if you're going to do that, then don't, like, okay, he throws at him once and misses. Like, there you go. You got your one. He throws at him again and misses. Now you're in this horrible situation where not just are you deliberately trying to hit a guy, but you're not very good at it. That's where it gets scary. That's where our guys get hit in the head.
Yeah, so that's a great point because I've never had to, like, no one's ever held me to the fire to talk about this. I've never had to be on a national show and discuss what my thoughts are on unwritten rules and hitting batters. I generally think that you should not throw a hard object that at someone's head.
Yes.
So I'm very much against that. I think throwing behind someone is okay if it's low. I think even throwing at someone, hit someone is, you know, we've seen it where they get hit in the butt and the leg, you know, but it's pitching, so it's hard.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those things like, if you hurt the guy, I'm going to be mad. If you don't, I'm going to be like, where were you aiming? That kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I give it a little bit of leeway because there's an implied risk. Like, anytime you're up in the box, you could be facing like 2010 Santiago Casilla. Like,
yeah,
you just could be throwing 99 and no idea where it's going to be. Like,
also, there's just this whole, in my mind, there's this could get twisted into a certain way, and I'm fine with being challenged on it. But I mean, you know, take the idea that baseball is a kid's game. I feel like the sport, even though it's on a professional level and there's millions of dollars and these people are supposed to be adults, there's a vein of immaturity in it. And the same immaturity that might compel someone to throw at someone as revenge also says, but it's done and it's over with now. Now let's just move on. So to me, there's something, they'll call it justice. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
But I think to your point, like, okay, you tried it once. It's done, right? You missed. You took your shot and you missed. Oh, well.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
No wonder that Bochy got thrown out. And I think he was right to be absolutely furious that there were warnings instead of tossing that pitcher. Like, as soon as you've got a guy who has, demonstrated not only intent, but the inability to follow through on that intent in the safest way possible, like, get him out of there. Get him the fuck out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the Diamondbacks aren't playing for anything.
Yeah. Oh, no, at this point, like, they've already, like, gotten the dreaded Fangraphs piece about how they should already trade Zach Greinke. Like, they're in that.
Oh, man, that's when you know you've hit bottom.
Yeah, like, and obviously, you know, Fangraphs is coming at it from a completely different perspective in terms of those business decisions, but just once you're attracting those vultures circling, things have started to smell.
That's true. They've had some bad luck with injuries in that sense. And, you know, kind of they traded Brad Ziegler right after this game, actually.
Yeah.
So they know where they're at. One thing I just want to circle back to was the Josh Osich hitting batters reference. That was in April. where he hit, he had consecutive appearances and he hit hitters and batters in both appearances. So I don't think the Diamondbacks are above remembering that.
They 100% remember it.
And holding on to that. It was April 20th, 420, and 421 where they where he hit batters. So, you know, yeah, it, they do have long memories, but it is
like Tony Russo goes into the clubhouse and leads everyone in like a group Arya Stark prayer where they're all like, you know, Joss Osich, Jeff Samardzija, just naming every pitcher the guy this year.
I kind of want to be fair to them though, because I feel like at worst they remembered it, but it wasn't until Samardzija hit Segura that it all pushed through. Because yeah, so maybe they actually do scout. They're just not great at it, and they're like, yeah, he probably has a problem with his control. But the home run, and he hits the same guy, and they hit us before. Like, it seems like they just remembered those two hit by pitches to push them over the edge. That seems more likely, and it's stupid and immature. And here we are, and here we are with the Giants winning the game. And what I like about the Giants is that it really pissed them off, because after all that happened and Bochy was ejected and they were trying to hurt, you know, Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford was like, "Hey, that's my good friend Buster Posey," and he crushed a home run off of a left-handed pitcher, Brandon Crawford. Not in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Damn it.
It's like there are all kinds of good, explicable reasons as to why Brandon Crawford is not in the All-Star game. There's all kinds of logic, and it's dumb. It's dumb. It has no place in my life. I don't care about any of that logic. Yeah. Brandon Crawford should be in the All-Star game.
So the home run that Crawford hit, that is the kind of thing where you're like, all right, this is that is the unwritten rule of how you deal with those situations, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I would say that a team like the Diamondbacks have lost. They really have lost our ability to believe fairly that they would, to be reasonable and assume that they would have thought, if the situations were reversed, I don't think the Diamondbacks would consider that they were square.
No.
Right? Because I feel like that organization has, in the last 5 years, 10 years, has lost that ability to be, you know, get the benefit of the doubt there.
Right. Yeah. They would hit the game tying home run and be like, all right, great. The game's tied up. So now we can give a free base runner without worrying about it.
Right. So yes, that home run tied the game. And the Giants, they, you know, again, I think it really just made them angrier. And maybe the Diamondbacks were a little surprised. I don't know, because they were happy swinging at Jeff Samardzija in the first couple of innings, but then after that he somehow overcame them and 6-2 win, and they had won the series.
Had a fantastic game at the plate.
Ron Wotus, I don't want to forget this, because how often do we get to talk about Ron Wotus managing a game? And he got to do it pretty early on in the game, but after Samardzija he brought in Derek Law right away.
Instead of going to Contos or
Right. He trimmed the fat. He just went lean meat, and then brought in Sergio Romo, and left Romo in. He didn't play matchups.
He didn't do the Bochy's been doing that a lot, like the platoon thing, where someone was tweeting about it recently, just about how ludicrously many single batter appearances the Giants have already this year. Left Romo in there, and he gave up a single to Goldschmidt, and then he struck out the side.
That's right, and looked really impressive doing that. He got Jake Lamb to swing and tumble into the other batter's box, and it's so rare that the Giants can make Jake Lamb look bad that's great. And so, you know, it seemed like Wotus was just saying, like, let's see what we've got, right? We've got a lead. Let's just go for it. Mm-hmm. And also he, in the fifth inning, I believe it didn't work out, but he pinch hit with Ramiro Pena, and I think the bases were loaded, and yeah, the bases were loaded, and he put in Pena to, see if he could break the game open really early on. And the Giants only got the one run in the inning when they had the 5-2 lead, but he was going for the kill.
Yep.
And also, you know what I kind of feel like? When you've got Ruben Tejada, Grant Green, Ramiro Pena, and Connor Gillespie as like your infield flotsam, you're far less precious about pulling those guys.
Right, yeah. It's like, I mean, my most impressive thing about that is that Wotus had the presence of mind to be like, no, no, Ramiro Pena is the better matchup here. Like, what?
Yeah.
They're the same guy.
Well, you'd like to think that, wouldn't you? But, you know, Ruben Tejada has not, his last year and a half has been pretty terrible.
Yeah, he can't really hit. And Pena's been, at least in a small sample size, he's gone up there. I mean, he's doing the Giants-y thing, which is showing up and immediately being aggressive, and it's worked out for him.
Well, I would say that that's like a 50-50 proposition. We've certainly seen guys just come up and, oh, Bill Hall. Nope. That didn't work out.
The thing the Giants like, which is, I think Bochy especially, there is nothing, you know, you can tell it really grinds his gears when he, you know, gets a rookie or like a minor league free agent kind of guy for a cup of coffee and a fill-in, and the dude just like takes a third strike. Like, you can just see the veins throbbing on his enormous forehead. It's like, just swing the bat, man.
Right.
Like, I think he's thinking back to his own days as a backup catcher. Like, how many opportunities did he ever get to, like, oh, this might be what makes me really catch on. Like, goddamn, I'm not taking a pitch.
I wonder if that extends to backup catchers, though, because then he's probably like, well, I know what he was doing there. He guessed wrong. That's all.
Yeah. No, backup catchers are different.
They're immune. Yeah. So the Giants, it was just a fun, it was a good game because, you know, when the Diamondbacks piss me off, I like to see them lose after that feeling begins. And that's what happened. And then that leads us into Saturday, and the Giants get another win, a 4-2 win. But this one, it was Jake Peavy on the mound, which, you know, two runs. Hey, that's great. He didn't make it through the fifth inning, of course, to make that happen.
Not really. He just wasn't feeling it. I don't even want to say it was necessarily like a super ineffective or bad PV game as far as how he was throwing. He just, you know, things that could have been a ground ball out instead snuck through, and his pitch count climbed, and he ran out of gas early.
Well, this is the problem. He's able to get the strikeouts, and he's been doing a pretty darn good job of pitching backwards, but just ultimately his stuff is, you know, this isn't his Cy Young year. This isn't 10 years ago. It's just not as sharp. And, you know, the Diamondbacks have some good hitters on their team, which is easy to forget about when all you want is just them to drive away in their clown car. But they do have some talent there. But I feel like the bigger part of this game was everything that happened between pitches.
Oh yeah, this is like the GIF All-Stars game.
That's right. Yeah, that's perfect. This was the GIF All-Stars game. We had a situation. If you didn't see it online, you got to find it. Buster Posey threw the ball back to Jake Peavy, but Jake Peavy was arguing about something I cannot remember now.
Like arguing with a distant blur.
Right. It's all distant blurs to him though. But Buster tossed it, and while Peavy was looking away, the ball basically banked off of Peavy's shoulder and right into his glove. It was a pretty cool shot. It was a good free throw. It broke the tie.
Like the Giants don't make the playoffs this year somehow. I think Bob Myers still has a roster spot for a shooter on the Warriors. Right. So Buster should probably just shoot him a text.
That's right. And there was also, and now I can't remember, was, oh, Javier Lopez was coming out from the bullpen, going out to the bullpen, or coming in, and he slipped and fell, and you know, never want to see someone hurt, but falling is inherently funny.
Yes.
Can't forget that. And
it was all great, too, because he had just the presence of mind to, like, turn it into a performative fall, right?
Yep. Meant to.
Through. Oh, I'm falling over in front of a bunch of cameras.
That's right.
I'm making the best of this.
Meant to. and congratulations to Javier Lopez. He only had to throw two pitches to get his guy out. He didn't walk the guy, and he had a good appearance. And then Contos and Suarez coming in relief, and Osich and Romo and Casilla. It was a banner day for Bruce Bochy. He got to just deploy the relievers.
Yeah, he did a little bit of matching up. I mean, obviously with Lopez, you want to platoon him, and it seems like Osich is trending more and more towards being, you know, a lefty only guy rather than an AFLD.
They tried really hard to make that happen too.
Well, you look at his stuff, and you really think he could be that guy. Like, I'm still like, why isn't he? He throws 97, but
he still could. He's not been able to master that sinker. Yeah.
And Suarez, it was actually, I didn't really think about it a lot at the time, but seeing Suarez deployed as just a regular old reliever is interesting and promising because, you know, assuming that Matt Cain does return on schedule after the All-Star break, they can keep Suarez around and just use him as another hard-throwing righty.
Right, and also that swing guy who, you know, is the piggyback to Peavy or Cain,
yeah,
which they're going to need. So I guess we'll take a brief Matt Cain aside. We have not discussed him on this Croncast in a long time. So yeah. Still trying to get his pitch count back up. He threw 75 pitches the other night, I think. And, you know, they're trying to get him back into the, you know, 85-90 range. And then he'll come back. I would say if you're a reasonable Giants fan, so automatically I'm out. But if you, you've got to give him a few starts, maybe four, to see if he can work back into the just before he got hurt rhythm he found.
Looking right. And then, you see what happens. And because it's not, you know, it's not as desperate as it was at that point. Like, Peavy's looking like a major league pitcher again. Samardzija is Samardzija, but I mean, you're not going to pull Samardzija from the rotation. Like, you're, what was it, 18 starts into, you know, 160 or something like that. Like, right. Samardzija's going to work his shit out. So, and then Cueto and Bumgarner are two of the best pitchers in baseball. So,
yeah,
all you can get away right. with, you know, having Cain, like, okay, well, he had a bad start, but we like what we saw from him. He just got unlucky. So, we're going to leave it in.
I mean, this doesn't sound crazy to me, even when I know when I say it, it's not going to sound crazy, and it's not crazy in my head. So if you or anyone else thinks this is crazy, you're wrong. I think what the Giants are hoping for is that it's Bumgarner, Cueto, and Cain when it's all said and done. That I think that they're fine with, like, they're not going after a starting pitcher at the trade deadline. That's not happening.
Yeah.
If something ridiculous happens and they can just claim someone off of waivers, maybe that happens, but I strongly doubt it. Because not just the financial implications, but, you know, need-wise, they came into the season expecting that Matt Cain was going to be there at the end. And right now, as it stands, the two guys you just mentioned, that's a five-game series. You can get through a five-game series with that. The Giants won a World Series with really just one really good starting pitcher, if we're being honest.
Good starting pitcher, period. Like, yeah. At the point in the season, nobody else was good.
So they're not necessarily afraid of that. They're not going to move Cain. And so, you know, and at the only thing they're going to be able to do with Peavy is cut him. He's not going to go to the bullpen. So he either stays or goes. So, you know, hopefully Matt Cain can start that comeback. I mean, he's here for one more year. He's not going anywhere. Anyway, talk about that aside because, you know, it's the Diamondbacks and I'm still pretty steamed about Friday. But that leads us now. Let's go into last night, the Sunday night baseball game. Sunday night baseball, where the Giants over a long stretch of time have not been great. And
it's just this ritual where the Giants get an ESPN Sunday night baseball game.
Right.
And it's like, great. I get to hear a bunch of strangers, you know, discussing the Giants publicly tripping over their own pants in front of America and everyone.
That's right. Or being pumped up. What has happened a lot recently is like the Giants are great in all these categories, or like they're doing it with like a collection of guys. And then in that same game, no one is good. Their defensive errors, you know, all the plate appearances are terrible. And it's just bad news. And the Giants have now they've done five of their six allowable Sunday night telecasts already. Who knew that the Giants would suddenly would be anywhere close to maxing out Major League Baseball's allotment of Sunday night baseball time?
I honestly didn't know there was a max.
There is six per team, which is crazy when you think about it. But I wonder how that Red Sox Yankees formula works out if it's like,
yeah, because there are at least 20 Red Sox Yankees games on Sunday night baseball.
That's right. Well, you can do 6 in Boston and 6 in New York, right? And there's your you can do it that way.
Yeah.
but I mean, we're talking around. Let's talk about what we're talking about, right? And that is Madison Bumgarner came very close to throwing his first no hitter, but more importantly, he was dominant. He's having the best season of his career, which is stunning to say.
Yeah.
This was probably his best start of the season. Like, and how his stuff looked for the whole game.
I mean, everything was working. The curveball, I think, was just the most incredible part of his arsenal.
That curveball, he could call on it whenever he needed it.
Yeah. It really is. So it was sort of a lesson in, a large part. We all know the large part of pitching well is circumstance. Like, things have to go right for you besides just the way you're throwing. And that was a game where everything else was going right for Bumgarner. The defense was good behind him, little Blanco blips aside. And he had the shadows, apparently. There was a lot of shadows discussion on KNBR. Giving him a little bit of an advantage over the batter. But it was just a situation where there was open road in front of him. Like, there was an opportunity there, and he took it. Like, you whether or not your things are going right for you, you still have to make your pitches, and he made every single one of them. Like, it was, like, not just, like, how the outcome, but like you said, he looked incredible. There were so few mistakes.
He was able to just get that late life on the fastball. He was working his slutter. I love that Grant has made that a thing.
Yeah.
And again, the curveball was just wherever, was whenever he needed it. But the big thing was that, one thing that Madison Bumgarner brings into every start is he doesn't give in. And when he's working, that is a lethal combination. Like, when his stuff is working and he's got it all going, that is a lethal combination, because hitters they can kind of be prepared for what's coming next, but it comes at you in such like he does not throw 97. He's not Aroldis Chapman. He doesn't throw like that, but his fastball is mean. He has a mean fastball.
Yeah, it's tempting. Yeah, you can't help but anthropomorphize it a little. Like, he throws the cutter that bores in over the plate looking like it wants to fight you.
Right. And I think, that's a large part because of that deceptive delivery he has that also works for him. There's another circumstance. I think mentality is so important, because it's possible that if you're unpredictable just enough, more than the next guy or more than whatever, more than usual, it's enough to throw hitters off. And then not to mention the shadows and playing off your normal schedule. These primetime games usually throw players off their schedule. This should have been a Sunday day game, right. And now they're playing like at a weird time with weird lighting and who knows, but Madison Bumgarner taking advantage of an opportunity that's right there for him. That's an ace. That's a star right there. Obviously there's times where guys don't have it and they fight through it. But when they are 27 years old and, 26 years old, holy crap, 26 years old. And they just like, he didn't look stressed. He would get behind hitters, but he just didn't look like he was like lost.
It was like that was the pitch I meant to throw. He didn't swing at it, or I didn't catch the corner. That's fine. On to the next one.
Yeah, the pitch to Jake Lamb. There's that guy again. That was a hit. It was a clean, solid single. But that was the worst pitch he threw.
Yeah, no, and it was like, and I don't recall it being like, oh, that was a meatball or anything. It was just like, good fastball. He hit it.
I will debate you on that. That was a Hunter Strickland break that plane of glass right in the middle of the plate. it's a lefty. It's supposed to bore in a little bit more. And it didn't even leak. It was just kind of right there. I mean, it ran basically right in there. But I want to say something about Jake Lamb, and that, this guy's been kind of messing with you the whole game, and you see what he's doing, like even in the at bat, like these are tough pitches that he's fighting off and looking at. And then just you know, this is where you're a professional and a mate. This is a professional hitter. Doesn't matter. Pitch to pitch. He's like, he recognizes it and he's ready for it. That is, I mean, that's really impressive.
Yeah. You
know, and I don't know that any of the Diamondbacks hitters would have been able to do that. We've certainly seen as Giants fans, you know, hitters miss pitches or just like, oh, I was right down the middle, you know, like whatever, yeah, because of a tough at bat. So that Jake Lamb, not in the All-Star game. Madison Bumgarner is, but he will not be able to play in it because he pitched last night. Johnny Cueto, let's come back to him and let's talk about that. He could be the starter of the All-Star game.
I just like the idea, you know, so this is one of the ways I think I've evolved as a Giants fan is like maybe 2011, even 2012, I would have said like, oh, whatever. It's just, you know, it's the All-Star game. It's stupid that it involves home field, but we can't really actually control that. And like, I'd rather our guys get some rest. And now, like, maybe it's all the Warriors watching that's done this to me. And I'm like, no, give me the Cueto Posey battery to start the game. Let everyone see. Let everyone bask in our glory. Like, I just, that, I don't, of course it doesn't matter to the product on the field. Like, of course there's no difference to the outcome of the season whether or not the Giants have this air of championship superiority about them. But God damn it, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, also, I think it, I mean, yeah, I want to see this. It's going to be hard to top 2012 is all I'm saying.
Oh yeah. With the Giants, defeated the American League.
That's right. That's right. I don't know how you're going to beat that. And now let's think about that 2012 for a second. They beat Justin Verlander in Kansas City. So their next two World Series things were kind of combined in that game.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Well, plus ex-Royal Melky Cabrera,
right,
who did in fact play on the Giants.
That's right. one thing we need to talk about that we didn't talk about last week was that Brandon Belt is also on this All-Star team. He will not be starting, but he won the final vote.
Giants fans are Twitter obsessives. It's amazing. Yes,
it's fantastic. He had 10.6 million votes. And even in LA County, I was responsible for most of those votes, I feel like. But
I have to confess, I didn't really do the vote belt thing. I retweeted a couple things to signal boost them, and that was it.
I did more than I've done in a very long time, but I'm exaggerating my input.
Well, and if you're going to do it for someone, you got to do it for Brandon Belt.
You got to do it for Brandon. This is great. Brandon Belt is... Even when you being everyone else, think, you know, Brandon Belt's not the, you know, he's not Joey Votto. He's not Paul Goldschmidt. He's not, you know, Todd Helton, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You can't, if you don't like Brandon Belt, the person, there is something wrong with you.
It's weird that of all players, he seems like, obviously people say stupid things about baseball players in the heat of the like, oh, that bum. Whatever, but like Brandon Belt has always attracted. I think that's what it is. Like, I'm not too exercised. If someone's like, yeah, I don't care what, you know, FWAR says about him. I don't think he's that good a hitter. Like, I would have argued with you in 2013, but it wasn't that big a deal. But he gets this weird personal antipathy, and I don't understand it at all.
I think it's just one of those things of like, he's a guy who's expected to be one thing and he's not that. And that's really all it is. But all the things that he actually is are all very like strong, positive, as who he is as a human and what he is as a baseball player are all great. What we know publicly, obviously, who knows? Maybe he's on MRA subreddits. I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
he'd probably f*** that up too. Well, yeah, and that, he has that sort of, I think one of the reasons he became, you know, at the same time a fan favorite in certain circles is that sort of air of haplessness when he's obviously not hapless. He is a very good baseball player. He's a professional baseball player, which is a job very few people have, and he's one of the better ones.
Well, the baby draft nickname was, you know, that was...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it just... The organization... At least on his behalf, kind of leaned into that haplessness and goofiness. And it just was this projection of you know, even when you're trying to argue like, no, he's actually really good. Look at these stats. Look at how he approaches this at bat. You're arguing with someone who's like, what, the kid in the fucking giraffe costume?
I love the haplessness. I find it endearing.
Absolutely.
Because an important distinction here, folks, is it's not like it makes him a bad player. This isn't like, to go back to basketball. He's not just tall, you know, and he has no coordination, but he can get rebounds. So he can only do one thing. Like, Brandon Bell can do many things on a baseball field, and it's not like every other giant is like him. So he's unique. So that's another thing about it. Also, I feel like because, you know, everyone loved JT Snow or whatever, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And I have no ill, I like him fine. But, you know, to me, it's like it's Will Clark, and then I don't think about any other Giants first baseman. But I think very much about Brandon Belt. So for me personally, I go, there's a charm to him. And, you know, the fact that he's really good, obviously, is the other thing that carries through. But he is a fantastic baseball player.
Yeah, and this feels, you know, in a way, as someone who's been arguing. I remember one time, I forget if I've told this story on the podcast before, so feel free to edit it out if I have. I was at my girlfriend's house and gave my dad a call to wish him a happy birthday. My girlfriend's roommate was hanging out in the living room at the same time. And within 5 minutes, we had gone from, hey, Dad, happy birthday, to, like, arguing at the top of my lungs about Brandon Belt. This was at, like, I think this was 2012. No, that was way too long ago. It was, like, 2013, maybe even 14. It was recently enough that there was no excuse for my dad to still think that Brandon Belt wasn't good. But, yeah, like, I just, within, you know, 5 minutes of happy birthday, I miss you, it was just this vociferous argument.
You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, yeah. You're wrong. You're
like, what are you talking about? He gets on base. So, for me, as someone for whom that was basically a summation of my Giants fandom for about 5 years, this feels like a personal victory that Brandon Belt is now an all-star first baseman and one of the best hitters in baseball.
And on the team. Like, clearly, which took maybe a bit too long to happen, that it was just very clear that he is. That's all I mean, that it's very clear. I want to say one more thing about Belt in the All-Star game, but now I lost it. So let's just focus on the fact that you're bragging about having a girlfriend. All right, fine. So no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. If you listen,
there was a witness that, like, that's right. That story.
Sure, Ruben. Yeah,
I buried the lead, which is when I hung up. Her roommate was just looking at me like, "What was that about?" And I had no idea why she was looking at me for you. Like, this seemed like a totally normal conversation. She's like, "Did you just call your dad to wish him happy birthday and then scream at him about a baseball player for 10 minutes?" Like,
yes,
yeah,
because he was wrong. Yes,
that's normal.
The Belt Wars have fractured families.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. If you're a fan of our podcast and not the McCovey Chronicles website, McCoveyChronicles.com, great content every day. The Belt Wars are a long-standing, I'd say they're over. I'm declaring them over.
Yeah, no,
they're over.
They've been it for like,
for easily 3 years. There's a loud contingent of anti-Belt people. Yeah.
And they're still out there. Like, there's still people, you know, even this season who are like, I just don't like the guy, you know, who are still grasping at straws and finding fewer and fewer. And it is like, you are not required to like every baseball player on the Giants. You can be like, oh, yeah, well, that guy's an asset to the team, I guess. But I just, like, I wish they'd gotten someone else. But at this point, if you don't think Brandon Belt is good, then I literally don't know what to say to you. I used to have, like, file folders full of arguments about, like, park factors and on-base percentage and defense, like, all this stuff. That was my own version of grasping at straws.
I'm so happy he's an all-star, though. I mean, this is the bigger point. It's like we've seen him progress. Remember when he clearly had a hole in his swing? And the hole was like right down the middle. And it's just like, do you have a vision problem? What is wrong with you?
Right. Like he could like foul off two strike pitches all day. It's like, oh, crap. The fastball down the middle. My old nemesis.
Right. And they changed his swing for a time. Like they did that adjustment. You know, he's you know, I think the only thing that you could say if you didn't like Belt and you were somehow being reasonable and just saying, well, I'm just disappointed because he's not going to be a 30 home run guy. Well, okay, right. that's one thing. But, you know, for the Giants, a guy who gets on base 400, you know, on base percentage and still hits doubles like no tomorrow, like that is incredibly valuable, especially for the Giants. That is incredibly valuable. They have no one close to hitting 30 home runs. Buster comes close, but I'm kind of the belief that maybe not, because his hand injuries and it's kind of piling up with age. It's like, you know, he's still a great hitter, but I, you know, he's not going to hit 30 home runs either. So
I think a full Pence, if he stays healthy for a full season, might still have a 30.
Maybe. Yeah.
27 in his contract year.
Yeah.
So he could get there.
That's about as close as it gets. But, you know, Brandon Belt, I mean, I think, and all the great things about the Giants being 57-33 at the All-Star break, this has to be right in the top.
It really is delightful.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this guy, the organization would, you know, they expected a lot of him and they were hard on him. Both has been hard on him.
And it really is a success story because was he drafted in the third round?
I think he was in the fifth round. Yeah.
Fifth round. Yeah. And it, which is sort of the zone of like, he's not a lottery ticket out of nowhere like Duffy was, but he's also not a sure thing. You know, people talk about the Giants drafting well during their first stretch, but like, you know, Timmy was like, all right, we're the ones who are going to take the chance on this guy's talent. And Buster was as sure a thing as there was in that draft.
Even Lincecum, though, was like, it's undeniable he's talented, but what's his role? Right.
Right, yeah. And then I guess Bumgarner was that sort of like, all right, we're taking a high school pitcher, we're going to do it. so for Belt, it's a story of like, you know, identifying this guy who clearly was a talented hitter and getting him at that point in the draft, for the org of working with, you know, developing him both at the minor and major league levels. And of course, obviously for Belt himself, which is a thing that I think a lot of the way we talk about drafting and development can be kind of overlooked, just how much the player figuring it out has to do with it. Like,
absolutely.
Belt has always been a good hitter to some extent. And I think this is something I should have mentioned before. Some of the frustration with him from people was always the sense that he could be more. And I argued with them that it's like, but he's good now. But, you know, looking at it now, I'm like, well, yeah, it is nice to have him, you know, with a 400 on base percentage and on track to set the franchise record for doubles.
Yeah. These are not small things, folks. It's very hard to do these things. And the fact that he's growing into it and not falling back in some way is very impressive. Extremely impressive. One other thing, you know, to talk about development, I want to take a minute to say that I really, you know, a guy who's gotten better and, you know, Brandon Crawford should be there. He's an all-star.
I know. It's crazy.
He was already an all-star. And even, you know, Doug pointed out, you know, like, well, Brandon Crawford still got like 300-something votes from the players. But, you know, Corey Seager has already been anointed over Brandon Crawford. And I thought, well, where's baseball's sanctimony about guys proving it and being there?
Right, yeah. Well, because Corey Seager was a blue chip prospect and highly rated and everyone saw him coming. Like, there's a sort of confirmation bias. And like, you know, remember Jock Peterson in the first half last year? Like, of course, everyone saw Jock Peterson coming and then he fell off a cliff and was terrible in the second half. He's good now, by the way. Jock Peterson's still good, right?
Right.
Last time I looked, he was good again.
He's injured right now, but he was starting to do better, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, he's a Dodger and all, but I like him. it's fun when they're healthy. But yeah, so Seager gets that sort of, I think there's a benefit of the doubt for prospects who you expect to play well coming up and playing well, as opposed to, you know, Matt Duffy last year. Like, well, is he for real?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Doesn't seem like it.
I think he's for a given value of real. He wasn't like up there like, I have no idea what I'm doing. He was just like, oh man, I keep hitting into outs, and then he got hurt.
One thing about Brandon Crawford, I mean, I really liked him just kind of staying down there in the eight spot because, you know, he could take his walks and occasionally get some good pitches to hit. But, you know, he's been higher up in the order for most of the season and his on base percentage is up. his slugging percentage is a little bit down, but you know, overall, you know, I kind of tend to think that it's somehow that's, you know, more or less it's half a season or it's 90 games. He's doing great. He doesn't have 21 home runs, but you know what? I'm going to chalk it up to that the Giants are facing a supernatural or a preternatural number of left-handed pitchers. Somehow their left-handed heavy lineup has invited more challenge. Like somehow more left-handed pitchers appeared. And I think that's overall like maybe sapped his power a little bit. That's just, I'm not even going to bother to look at the numbers. I'm just going to say Brandon Crawford is having a great offensive season. He's probably not going to hit 21 home runs again. But that could just be a blip because I think he looks as good as he did last year at the plate.
Yeah, no, he's getting on base at a career high rate. Right now he's slashing 281, 353, 447, which are just, those are just like good offensive numbers in general. Right. When you're putting them up in a hitter's park that is particularly hard on left-handers, then they're very good offensive numbers. And then when you're getting that out of the best defensive shortstop in at least, you know, one of we'll say arguably the best defensive shortstop in the majors, and it's just like, oh, this guy might be like a borderline superstar.
Yeah, he and Andrelton Simmons, I think, are pretty much consensus defensively of the shortstops there. I saw Troy Tulowitzki make a play the other day that I am, you know, I shouldn't be surprised at this point, but it was pretty amazing.
There's something said for Francisco Lindor. He's having
a and play. Lindor, yeah.
But yeah, he's up there. So yeah, no, it there are lots of reasonable explanations for why he's not in the All-Star game, and I think they're all dumb.
That's right. And one more reasonable explanation, but also dumb, was I'm bringing this up again, folks, because I am also still steamed that baseball decided to diminish the entertainment value of having pitchers in the home run derby and brought up the, you know, the players union is the reason why Bumgarner is not in the home run derby, allegedly. That, which to me, that doesn't, if that's what they're saying, then that actually means that that's the reason, you know, it seems like the players union would not stand for that speculation to be out there if it was untrue. So, that's the reason. And I believe the reason is because some guys have in their contracts, you know, home run derby bonuses. And if a pitcher takes a slot away from that or takes away that opportunity, then that's a problem. And to my response,
I second that. I have no, yeah.
You can't expand the field to have the pitchers in there or better yet, have a much shorter competition between two pitchers, as like the pre-show, as the warm-up.
Sure. Yeah.
You could have just had Bumgarner versus Arrieta or Bumgarner versus Cologne as the warm-up. And just, they could have just had 5 or 10 minutes, let's say 5 minutes, to just whatever. And that's it. One round, that's it. Whoever wins that wins it. And that's it. And then you're done. You walk off. So let's pick one thing we do that we've added since you were last on is we pick our best game of the week and the worst game of the week and also our player of the week. So what do you think last week was the best game of the week?
Best? I got to go with Sunday. I mean, the first D-backs game was great for, you know, shot like the payback factor. Cueto was a lot of fun, but man, Bumgarner.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty easy. That's slam dunk. Yeah. I think we all know what the worst game of the week was, unless you want to pick one of the wins like a monster.
Yeah, that would be weird.
The loss to me was the singular loss. Has to be the worst game of the week, but also just has that portent of like, if things go bad for the Giants, it's going to happen in this way.
Right. Exactly. It was explicable losses are kind of the worst when when it's like, oh, you know, some joker, what's an extremely generic pitcher?
Josh Eflin.
Yeah, sure. Josh Eflin throws. Is Josh Eflin even a guy?
I think yes. He's
Eflin.
Zach Eflin, thank you.
Zach Eflin throws like 8 innings, a shutout ball. You're like, oh, well, baseball just happened. But yes,
Kendall Graveman. There we go.
Kendall Graveman. Oh, my God. Yeah, if someone just insert A's pitcher here, shuts you down. should right. probably happen.
So, you know, but I feel like this is the, you know, if the Cubs are the Giants' destiny, we know how that series could go badly for the Giants.
Yeah.
And it could be one of those things where it's like, oh, we're up 5-0 in the seventh inning. I would never say we. The Giants are up 5-0 in the seventh inning. Here comes Derek Law. No!
That's like, it's like the 2011 Giants losing a game 2-1. Like, well, that's how this goes.
Yeah, yeah.
But they won the other five, so,
that's
you know.
Right. It was a great week. Cannot complain. So, the worst game is, like, the worst. All I mean is, like, that is the worst possible game the Giants could have. Because that offense is not going anywhere. Somehow the Giants have cobbled together a very efficient, or I should say, not efficient, because of last night's game, they left a lot on base, but a prosperous offense, essentially.
Yeah, and they've done it with, you know, I would consider Hunter Pence going into the season, who we expected to be their second or third best hitter, missing half the season, and with two very capable infielders missing large chunks of time, and they're still putting it together.
Yeah. So, who do you have as a player of the week?
I feel like the Brandons are splitting the vote. I want to give it to one of Belt or Crawford.
You can have an honorable mention, or we can anoint our first ever double players of the week. We can
do. I feel like they might be. I mean, I might be a fool. While we're talking, I'm going to have to go check the stats for the last 7 days. But I'm pretty sure they both had, over the last six games, very good games, all up in like. Across the board. And
well, Brandon Crawford, we could just do July's stats, because July is young. Wait, excuse me. I'm clicking on the wrong page. So you want to pick the Brandons. We can just say
that. Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking at Bell. Last seven games, he's 8-for-25 with 7 walks, which is insane. Yeah. He had a 4.469 on base percentage. So he had a pretty nice week.
Yeah. And Brandon Crawford's OPS is like 940.
Yeah. And Crawford only over the last seven games, he's slashing .233, .455, but he had a couple amazing defensive games where he was just everywhere, where he just gobbled up the ball. It was, yeah. So, I'm picking the Brandons, co-player of the week.
Good picks. So if you disagree with our choices, you can disagree in the comments section down below. Who do you think? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Now, real quick, you know, we're going to play a quick game before we answer the Twitter questions. This is a quick game because I just had it popped in my head. Ruben, let's try to figure out what the actual names are for the colors of the various Diamondbacks uniforms. They look gray and like charcoal and like teal or something, I don't know, but like, what, you know how everything, it's like it's not white, it's like a sad white person vanilla or something like that. Yes. You know what I mean? So they have very specific colors. Do you have any thoughts on, I think their colors are, that gray is actually like it's grit gray is too basic, so I'm gonna say it's cubicle gray. Cubicle gray? I'm going to go with the right way gray.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at the, what are these? The roadies? The bright red ones that were like some of the first unveiled ones?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, the alternates. Those are the color of like a Happy Meal toy that I would have been really excited about. But like, that's a Happy Meal toy specifically marketed towards 8-year-old boys.
Well, I call those like, the F-Zeros.
The F-Zeros.
Remember that game F-Zero, the racing game on Super Nintendo?
Oh, yeah.
And then you'd hit those little speed things. And so that's what the bottom of their uniforms look like, those little speed marks on the ground. So
we're on the same. I think we're on the same page aesthetically, which is that these are uniforms designed to appeal to prepubescent boys who have had way too much sugary cereal.
That's right, and are probably not at all interested in baseball, specifically Diamondbacks baseball.
No.
Yeah. All right. So, like we do every week, we're going to get to your Twitter questions. We're going to get to them quickly because this is running long and I'm getting tired. So, so we'll go with first Twitter question. I posted it out there that, you know, Ruben, you're a fantasy writer, a novelist. So I figured, you know, any baseball questions or fantasy writing questions would be great. At Whale Wolf asks, please explain the difference between high and low fantasy and which one is the Giants 2016 season.
Sweet. Yeah. So the real quick and dirty version, I think, is a question of scale. Like high fantasy, your characters are going back and forth about the fate of the kingdom or the world. Low fantasy, your characters are going back and forth about the fate of the loot. It's like, who's going to get rich off of this?
Okay.
So I think the Giants season, this is a high fantasy kind of series. This is like epic things are happening. There are like big interwoven narratives. You know, you've got Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt with their ascendant stars. You've got Matt Cain struggling repeatedly to make his comeback. And you've got the weight of the even year thing. I think that's really the biggest thing is the even year narrative is a total like fantasy bullshit prophecy. Like, you know, the Giants were chosen. Really, I think the question is, are they the villains? I think they might be the villains.
Maybe, but I also think that the 1993 aspect is either the sneaky curse that comes back or in some way or affects it, or is the last obstacle for this, you know, quest or this group to overcome.
No, I really think they're the villains in the 1993
okay,
thing
right.
is like that there's like a plucky minor leaguer somewhere who's on a quest to like find Solomon Torres. It's the bane of this Giants juggernaut.
You know, as someone who is not a fan of the tech culture, that is not the same as saying technology or, you know, investments, whatever you want to talk, you know, investment spending, speculative spending, whatever, or people getting rich. The tech culture. Also, that my long-held belief that San Francisco is secretly a shitty city. Not the way it looks, but the people who live there. That the idea that the Giants and the Warriors are villains, to me, is not that big of a leap.
Oh, no, it's pretty perfect. I mean, it took me a while to come around to it, and then it was like that reveal. It was like a Usual Suspects moment where all of a sudden I look back at like everything I've been watching. I'm like, oh my God, it makes so much sense now. We're the bad guys.
Hold on, I'm trying to think of what your mug is that you dropped.
Oh God.
I'm like, oh, is that when you dropped your Ray Durham mug? Or I was trying to think of an atypical Giant there. Yeah, I mean, oh, and just real quick. You know, the reason why I think San Francisco is, you know, got crappy people in it, and I'm going to say it's because all of my – that comes from years and years of going to San Francisco and encountering the rudest people I've ever met in my entire life in San Francisco. But I will say this. Every single one of those people, and I can remember most of them clearly, they all said or it was clear they were from Marin.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
So I'm at least saying that. All right. So that's it. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Okay. All right. Next question is, so high fantasy for Giants. At Robert Hainer asks, would going to the AAA All-Star game be a quality honeymoon? Well, I would say, Rob, that if your spouse is into baseball as much as you are, and then maybe. But I would hope that it's not the only thing.
What city is the AAA All-Star Game in? You know,
I'm going to look it up. And it also has a cool name, which I'm blanking on right now.
Yeah.
It's something, and it's like a 3-game series, too.
Oh, that's right.
Am I making this all up? No.
Well, I've got an app for this.
Wait, I think I'm making this all up. No, one of these has a cool name. AAA All-Star Game is going to be July 13th in Charlotte. But I thought it had a really cool name, and they played each other, like the Rock Shitty Showdown or something like that. And they played, like, multiple games. Anyway.
Yeah. Charlotte's supposed to be a nice city, I guess. I don't really know much about it.
Well, let's look at weather.com real quick.
I would say that as a honeymoon, there are certainly worse ideas, but this is really, like, minor league baseball is really one of those things where everyone who you're there with has to be into it. Like, it is not an activity where you can have one person sort of like, you know, it's not a big league ball game. You don't have all the like random distractions and shit.
I feel like that's a good point.
The AAA All-Star game with someone who clearly wasn't into it, it would not be a fun experience for me. Obviously, as a honeymoon, you want to make sure it's a fun experience for both people involved.
Now, if this is we suppose that this was the 2016 AAA All-Star game. Next year is the 30th anniversary of the AAA All-Star game, and it is in Tacoma.
You know what? Tacoma's not. You know, it's not that bad, and you can go up to Seattle. It's an hour drive away.
Or go to Vancouver. You could spend your honeymoon in Vancouver and come down to the All-Star game.
I feel like if you're planning your – okay, that's a good point. The date thing, if you're planning your honeymoon 3 days out, I hope you've already figured that out. No, but next year, go to Tacoma. Go to Seattle.
If you're doing it this year, you're screwed. That marriage is over.
Yeah.
Or that's a bad foot to start off on.
We did not think that through.
No. At Hanging Sliders, our Wendy Thurm, who's guest of the show previously, will Bumgarner ever amount to anything? And which backup will be cut first? So she snuck in two questions there. Bumgarner ever amount to anything? I don't know. After his plate appearances today, I don't think so. Sure. He looked rough. He looked really bad.
0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. No, cut him.
Yeah. So, nope. And the Giants are going to be glad to be rid of that contract. I think when it's over.
Who's the next super backup coming through?
Well, I think Tomlinson is probably close.
Oh yeah, but I feel like there's
Burris. Am I missing somebody?
Yeah, they're going to get the cavalry back. I think they're already down several backups. So I don't know if we're going to see another who the hell is this guy this season. Maybe a random.
You know what? I'm knocking on wood here because that. I think
we might, if the outfield woes continue, which is always a good bet with three starting outfielders over 30, we might see Austin Slater.
Well, I certainly think that's, you know, I would kind of hope that that just means more playing time for the cuts they have in the outfield.
Totally. But just, you know,
I'm starting to want that more and more, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I guess Joe Panik is probably most likely to come back first, but you know, concussions—you can never really tell. So he might, but he might be back at the break. I would say if everything goes okay, he'd be back first. But you know, I think the Giants are in a good problem to have category.
Yeah. Oh my God, we totally misread that question. It was which backup will be cut first?
Oh, okay, which will be cut first? Oh, because we're talking about Grant Green, Ramiro Pena, and Ruben Tejada. Ruben Tejada.
Yeah, definitely Tejada.
I think Connor Gillespie's earned a spot. If not, he's going to stick around for a while.
Yeah, Giants love their reclamation guys. Tejada does have, I think he's a little more versatile than the other guys because he can play short.
Yeah, I think he's actually a decent-ish defender.
Yeah. But I don't think he gives them anything that Adrianza doesn't, and Adrianza will be available at some point.
I don't think they're cutting Adrianza. I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, and Pena can play short, right?
He's limited there too. But I mean, Pena's made it. You know, I like Pena even before he started doing what he's doing. So I would hope that they hold on to him. I think his switch hitting, he's essentially what they are hoping Adrianza becomes. Yeah.
So it pains me to condemn a fellow Ruben, but I think Tejada.
Grant Green. I think they might like him, and they need a right-hander at some point. And if it's between him and Tomlinson, I think that's another thing to sort out. Okay, and then last two questions. At AMC Boricua 510, Amber, she asks, which backup infielders – oh, this is the same question. Which backup infielders should stay on the 25-man when Duffy and Panik return? Well, we just answered that. So we think it should be Pena and Green.
Yeah, maybe Gillespie. Maybe I don't know. That's,
I guess I'm considering that he's not going anywhere. And if I think Gillespie should stay. I don't know. You know, I don't actually know if he should stay. I just feel like he's going to stay. Yeah. He doesn't wear batting gloves, so I don't like him. But Anyway, and then the last question goes to the biggest Warriors, the leader of the arrogant season, Andy Liu, at Andy KH Liu, big on basketball Twitter. He asks, what the F is a Grant Green?
Well, Grant Green is our favorite kind of former prospect, a former A's prospect who never did anything for them. And now he's doing things for the Giants, which just warms my heart. Like, I love it so much.
And the Giants were his favorite team growing up.
Yeah, that's true. So Grant Green just kind of, like, I actually had a similar reaction. He was not even on my radar of, like, guys whose baseball reference pages I've looked at once. And he showed up and, you know, didn't look totally incompetent. He's hitting an even 300 right now. He has a major league home run, which is one more major league home run that he ever hit with the A's.
Is there a Warriors, a Golden State equivalent?
That's a good question. It would have to be like someone.
Is he like the Mo Buckets of the Giants? No.
Who's someone who was like drafted by or played? It would be like if Jason Thompson had been good for the Warriors last year. If he like gave them key minutes in like, you know, down the stretch, like when Barnes was hurt, if he ate a bunch of backup minutes and was great. Or like, no, it would be like the Warriors ending up with Nick Stauskas in a couple of years, and he was really good.
Oh, Jesus. All right, so this is a future projection. That's a solid comp. All right. So every week you can send us your questions. There's now a new Twitter account specifically for the Croncast because, you know, I'm not getting any younger. Who knows what's going to happen in this world, right? So at McCroncast is the handle, at MC Croncast. And you can send your questions, follow the account. That'd be great. Follow it. Also on iTunes or wherever you see the podcast, leave your review, whatever, doing those shameless plugs. Thanks for listening. Ruben, where can they find you online? Because I know that you're going to announce your book stuff when all that gets going and spit out the baseball knowledge. And where can they find you?
Well, don't hold your breath on the book, but I am on Twitter at Lies and Perfidy. You can find me occasionally on the front page of McCovey Chronicles, do some Game of Thrones and related stuff coverage with Dorkadia at Dorkadia on Twitter. And I think that's it for me right now.
Okay. That's really good. I'm at Every 6 Day and, there's going to be another Croncast this week. We're putting together an all-star Croncast. We're trying to get, some big names from the site and people you've heard on the show before. So check it out. That should go up on Thursday. And thanks for listening to this one, which went up definitely today. Today is Monday, July 11th. Bye.
Sweet.